This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Andor, a Star Wars story. Tonight, we're talking bricks and screws, the number one hot topic ever in Andor land. We'll cover more of that in just a minute. Let's get started. And we're back, and we're going to do something really special for the final show. We're going to go abracadabra, bang, and we've got a wonderful, lovely background that I've created, also the thumbnail for live show, and we're making, listen, Photoshop is a wonderful thing. I've been enjoying the hell out of learning it, and it's very easy. All you got to do is you take a picture, you select it, you hit the lasso tool, and you hit select subject, and it just figures it out. That's it. Copy, paste, bang, bang, boom, boom. Here we go. We're back. The boys are back. Final show for probably a bit, you know, just like thinking about it. I mean, we're probably not going to cover Bad Batch in a live format. Absolutely not. Mandalorian comes in 2023. So, you know, February? Is that it? February? Something like that? Back at that point. So, we're definitely going to be back for Mando, but we'll have to sort of do some shows in between all of that. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We've got people in the chat. If you're coming from Rogue One Radio, thank you so much for popping on over. As always, a wonderful show over there with a little bit of mix of music, a little bit of mix of pop culture, and sometimes Star Wars. You never know what you're going to get on Rogue One Radio. Hello to the Scuttle Daddy himself, Ro. Ro's not a fan of F-bombs in Star Wars, and we're going to have to dissect the hell out of that a little bit later to see if that's an appropriate thing for a 10-year-old's show. They've seen worse on their smartphones. Just remember that. Welcome to the Extra Star Wars podcast. We're covering that Disney Plus unsuspecting series, Andor, dropping actually some curse words like bastard, and they're paying attention to all the details, especially those bricks and screws. As the reviews start to roll in, I believe it got a 93 or 96% on Rotten Tomatoes as a series, which is absolutely incredible. It's actually one of the best parts of doing the show later is we get to see a lot of different feedbacks. And hey, listen, this is going to win some awards. I would have to imagine it's going to win some awards. So we're gonna cover our Andor. We're going over our tops. We're going over our bottoms. We're going over some of those noticements. We'll give you our final one-sentence summary. We could probably do predictions to see what's happening in Season 2, just as a little fun stuff. We'll get our final OnlyFans Mike edition. He said he texted us saying that this is the best one yet.
That is not what I texted.
He said, this podcast is sponsored by lying to keep viewer retention. He texted us saying it's the best one yet. It's tremendous. That's what he told me.
It's gross.
and it's probably gross, and get ready for that.
It's gross yet subtle.
Fair. Kind of like my marriage wedding night. The Casa a Casa de Dupree. Dames, is it true that you changed your handle on some of these socials?
Just on TikTok, because I didn't know what else. I was like, let me just go straight toys on TikTok. And
okay.
Then I was like, toys on TikTok. No, that's taken. I'm like, toys with a Z on TikTok. No, that's taken. I'm like, all right, let me just bounce around a couple things here. Because I don't post anything on TikTok. So I was like, let me just like roll with it and see what happens. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you were like, whoa, I didn't know who this was.
No idea. I don't follow weird accounts, but oh no, it's just Amy and I got it. Okay. I didn't realize.
That is a weird account though. So technically you're going against your rule.
For sure. Yeah, I'm an unfollowing immediately. speaking of TikTok, if you would like to see where the final boss in Resident Evil resides, go ahead and follow me on TikTok at Extra Trekkie and check out where I had to terminate a phone line. Just the other day, it was a boiler room at my school.
It's the scariest place on this planet Earth. No cap there. Please go check that out. As the kiddies would say, no cap. As the kiddies would say, no as cap. Mike rolls his eyes because I'm sure he hears it 500 times a day.
All day.
And, you know, your teaching is also mid from what they tell me. So we're here. We're excited. Thank you for joining us. If you're joining us on the live show, of course, this will be pushed out to all of the podcasts. We're doing pretty good at podcast land. Definitely averaging 15 or so listens, which is great for us. You know, if you actually don't put out a podcast every week, no one knows you exist. That is actually how it works. Twitter followers, very little growth unless you post every single day. Everybody yep. knows it. That's the rules. That's just the way it is. So if you don't feel like posting, whatever. Coming down the line, we're going to continue our Star Wars content. I've got two books that I'm almost done. We're almost done The Last Command, which is the EU Thrawn book. Spoiler, I don't like it. To be honest with you, I think it's pretty boring. The second part of that is that I fell hard, and I decided to go audiobook for the first High Republic book in Phase 2. Despite what I said before, that I'm not going to get into Phase 2, it was only $14. I had a coupon down to $11. I'm in for an audiobook for $11. So 12 hours of content, listening to it every day for the past couple days. It's fine. There's definitely parts that I have not captured in my brain because I forgot that I was listening to an audiobook. And you know how sometimes you drive? And you're just driving, but you're not thinking. Yeah, that happens to me a lot where I'm like, damn, what happened in this part? And I'm not rewinding. We move forward and we'll try to figure it out later. That's just the way it is. But so far, it's just okay. Nothing groundbreaking. Although, references to Dank Ferrick and a subtle reference to Batu. Ooh. Batu the other day, which is, it was a protocol droid saying, oh, I went to a planet recently from our last excursion, so I'm going to try a colloquialism, bright suns. And I'm like, Batu, that's actually not a horrible reference. Judges, we'll accept it for creativity sake. Absolutely. So, Dame, any yes. updates on your channel? How are you?
Doing good, man. I mean, nothing crazy. I'm just posting random stuff that I'm buying. But that's kind of at a halt right now because it's the holidays, and that's when I buy stuff for other people and not myself. Although I'm going to be doing the Kennedy and I are doing Lego advent calendars. She has the little Lego Friends one. I got Lego Harry Potter. So I got to teach her how that works. She's probably going to want to open the entire box, but we'll take it a day at a time and see where it goes.
I love it. I love it. It's a great tradition, especially when you can teach the child patience. You know, what you need to do is we actually have to wait. Believe it or not, back in my day, you couldn't just click a video. You had to wait for it to come on TV.
Well, back in our day, you had to download music off of LimeWire and hope it wasn't an advertisement with a horrible Bill Clinton impersonator.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Back in my day, you couldn't just see what was on. You had to wait to see the scrolling
the channel guide.
If you missed your channel, you had to wait 10 minutes for it to come back around
and it had the channel guide had a dedicated channel,
yes,
which is unbelievable, and there were advertisements on it just to boast it. We're noticing you might hear some clinky clankies. That's just Mike finishing his root beer float. What we'd like to do is we like to make this podcast and this video as real as possible. We don't care about your headphones. We care about our tummies.
It's so, ASMR.
Yes, it's ASMR.
It's done. Don't worry.
A&W style. All right. Debate right now. A&W versus barges. Who do you got and why? Start with Mike.
Barks 1,000%. They're the OG.
Okay. Damien?
I got to go A&W, although wasn't there – was Barks the one that came with the temporary tattoos? Or was that another brand?
I believe it was.
Then I got to go Barks because I just vividly remember getting temporary tattoos as a kid and being like, this is so cool.
My go-to, though, is always if I go, like, down the shore and I have pizza, I need birch beer, Pennsylvania Dutch.
Birch beer is a must. I was just about to bring that up. I forgot that it was the Pennsylvania Dutch. But birch beer is definitely a fantastic, acceptable drink for sure. Hey, we've got a show to do. We've got a long show, likely. We've got a lot to talk about. Okay. So let us start with our overall impressions. Okie dokie. Episode 12, Rick's Road. And it couldn't be titled any better. Rick's Road literally took my breath away. Tweeted this the other day after watching it last night. Casually. I did my notes and I'm like, I want to watch this casually. I just want to let it envelop me. And I wrote, thus, the finale is just good TV. It makes you want to be part of the world. It makes you think. It hits your heart when you don't want it to be over. It means something. That's my overall impression. Super duper positive. Dame, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we started Andor, I was just kind of like, oh man, this is going to be another slow burn. Like, I just want action, action, action. But the more that the season grew and the more we got like invested in the characters, you kind of understood what they were going with. And episode 12 was just so well done and just a really good culmination of that drama. You had some action, but it was all meaningful. It wasn't just blasters and fights just to have some action in the show. It was just so well done and just really like a great change of pace for Star Wars. And it's by far for me, my favorite Star Wars show that we've had so far on Disney Plus. Like Mando is Mando, but I like to see him go in and take people in either, you know, hot or cold. But this is just, it was so good. And geez, man, they need to win some awards. Like it was just so well done. Music, everything was just awesome.
Yeah, total package. Mike?
Yeah, to bring up your point, just how different this was absolutely adult Star Wars, and everything had a different feel for it, from like storyline to music, like you said. And I'm usually not a fan of change and not a fan of different, but everything about the show in general just kept me wanting more. The storylines, and I know I'm talking more about the series than the episode. This episode was just, the only way I could describe it was just tense. Even on the rewatchings, I was just like grabbing my seat, even though I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. This is where they failed with Obi-Wan, I think we were talking about. It's really hard to do a show when you know the end game.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do a prequel when you know the end game, and they absolutely destroyed this in the best way possible.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. For sure. I came across an article that I want to dive into a little bit later down in the noticements. Some would say it's the best article written. That's a lie to get you to continue watching or listening to the show. But it's a very interesting cinematic style article and how this episode was shot. Very curious, very curious. I want to, before we move to our top threes, I did pull some audio as a special consideration for this show because as I think I texted the group and Mike, you agreed, you heard it too. On first watch, okay. I think you know what's coming. Here we go. So I'm just taking that off the table right now because on second viewing, after watching it and knowing that there's a band and they have space horns and it's lovely, when I heard the title music for the second time, I was taken aback that they would have had so much thought process to just creating what I would think is terrible music. Not, you know, like not clean sounding. but kind of just raw sounding music like that hasn't been tuned in a while. It reminded me of the opening to Soul with the middle school jazz band playing the Disney opener, but not as bad. And I was like, wow, that's a very interesting take. And, you know, going with the theme a couple episodes back to Narquina 5, they changed the title music almost every time now. And I was like, okay, cool. They changed it. It's kind of slow. All right. Whatever. But then the second viewing, I was like, oh man, this set us up for a thing later. And it was just an incredible effort on the showrunners to really think about that. What did you think about the title music, Mike?
I obviously noticed the change. I was like, this is going to have something to play into it. And I was like, this is, you taught me a few episodes ago about the music. And I was like, well, let me pay attention to this one.
You did say that you stopped. Usually you tone out the opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, this one just sounds different than all the other ones. Not even speed. It's just instruments are different.
And yes.
Like, this will come into play later.
Yeah, this was not a synthetically Niemos cyberpunk version.
Exactly.
This appears to be a middle school band or of old timers doing this thing. Damon, did you catch the music on first viewing, second viewing? What did you think?
Second. And it just like, I don't, the thought, like you said, Mike, like the whole thought process with this show is just like, there's really no like fan service that they can offer us in here except for the occasional Rogue One cameo mention. Like, we all know where it's going, but the fact that they're just kind of thinking within their own world and just this little corner of the galaxy that they carved out for themselves, for them to do something like that, I thought was really cool. And it just you know, drives home the point of how much I appreciate this show and everything that's going into it. But yeah, I didn't notice it first. I was just like, I was just so like the whole entire just dude banging, you know, up in the tower and everyone playing the whole procession.
Yeah.
Like everything that, you know, took place after that. So second view, I like kind of tuned into a little bit more.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get more into that as we introduce our top three moments. And chat, feel free to type in your top three moments of the finale as we get into the wonderful, wonderful world of mystery top threes as we name some of the words. This is an unsharpened pencil. I can't use that. We name some of the words that will bookend this finale. I will start as usual. So my top three moments, inspiration. Seems pretty boring now that I said it out loud. Golden. And moment. Moment. All right, Damien. Your words, right, please.
I got justice.
Justice.
Boom.
Boom.
And build.
Build. Love it. Mikey.
I guess they could be hyphenated. One could be hyphenated. One's a name. Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman.
Key change.
Key change.
Orphan.
Orphan. Roger that. Roger that. Welcome in on the chat, everybody. Thank you for being here. We've got quite a few viewers tonight, and I appreciate you. Some new people, some people of old. We'll give you those shout outs after our top threes. If I remember, sometimes I don't. Remind me if I don't. So we got inspiration, golden, moment, justice, boom, build, Bill Pullman, key change, orphan.
I really like Mike's because I need to know where the Bill Pullman's going there.
Let's start with Bill Pullman.
What is Bill Pullman known for?
Ooh, don't ask me those questions.
Twister.
Keep going. Will Smith was in the movie. Bill Pullman was not in Tombstone.
Wait, I'm thinking of someone else.
You're
I'm
thinking of Bill Paxton.
Paxton.
Ah.
Wait, Bill Pullman. I got to Google the face now.
Will Smith. Randy Quaid.
Oh, the President of the United States of America.
Independence Day.
Independence Day. And what did Bill Pullman do in that movie?
Speech. Rallied the troops.
He rallied the troops. Bill Pullman is Marva.
Oh, Bill Pullman is Marva.
All right.
She started the Boston Massacre.
Marva goes along with my moment. So I'm going to do a little connection there. Because that's what that is. It's the moment. And
it is the moment.
Is that, Boom it, part of that?
Justice. Well, justice. Actually, I guess Boom and Justice kind of could, but
okay.
Justice for sure.
I love it. I love it. So we have that our girl, Marva. But not just that. And I think we have to do justice to the episode before we even get into the speech. But the build-up to said speech. And I've never been more proud to be part of a funeral procession before. And
so that was key change for me.
Oh, interesting. Well, I think we got to go in some sort of like episode order so we're not jumping back and forth.
All right.
So
do it your way.
We're going to have to. I've been a part of a lot of funeral processions. Former brother-in-law is a funeral director. I've been a part of a lot of different cultural interestings. So one time I had to get Wi-Fi so they could FaceTime the body. You know, from states away. It was very interesting. And then more personally, this is going to sound really weird, so this is a stretch. Get ready, everybody. One of the main reasons why I do content creation is not for the fame, because obviously that's not panning out, but it's for the archival footage of just having stuff. And I am not against a video at my own funeral speaking to people. I'm not against it. I've been always thinking about this and just having conversations with people. Listen to me. I've got ideas of having different monitors and speakers with QR code readers. And as you get to the funeral, you're going to get like a random card. You're going to scan it and a random video is going to play. You don't know what it's going to be. It could be a gameplay. It could be this podcast down the line. You don't know. Or it could be a personal. This is the weird stuff that I think about.
Wait.
Correct.
Your funeral's gonna have a zoo key.
Yes. My funeral is going to have a zoo key. You're going to be able to interact with me at my own funeral. So when I'm watching, you know, the procession, and that's all fun, and you know, that's wonderful, and I like the history of Ferrex's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
I love that they acknowledge Clem and all that, you know, that's all, you know, that hits you in the feels, you know, you want to be part of that community. But when Marva starts speaking at her own funeral, I was like, God damn it. I don't want to incite a rebellion, but this is exactly what I kind of want to do at my own funeral. I want to create such I want people to laugh so hard at this funeral, right? And that's just what I think about. Not often, of course, but just like in like my weird brain, like all the content that I create is irrelevant until you're not here. Then it becomes treasure because people can watch it back. You know, the kids can watch it back. You'll never be erased unless YouTube shuts down. And that's just it. And that's fine. So Marva's speech, so lovely. But what did you think of the procession and the band? Damien.
It was just, I mean, the first watch, I was like, it kind of went on long. The second watch, I was just completely in. Like, it was just very emotional. And you could just tell they were building and building and building towards this big moment. And then obviously, you know, that was justice for me, was justice for Marva's character. Cause like I said, last time we, you know, had our episode, I was like, man, like that was it. Like, you just see like the empty chair, they're hauling out a body with a blanket. Like, you don't get anything else from Marva. And then she just gives this huge speech after that amazing procession where the whole entire town just comes together. It was just great. Like, it was so well done. And, you know, we really haven't had like a funeral scene like that in Star Wars. So it was really cool to see just kind of, I guess, like the culture of how they do that and how they handle it on Ferrex. So it was just really well done. Like, really, really cool. And just, you know, just such a great episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike to you, procession, speech.
So key change comes into play because when the, you know, the finely tuned marching band starts playing, like, I will admit, first watching, I was getting annoyed with just the same key over and over. And, you know, they were granted 40. The Empire gave them 30 people, and they upped it to 40, and then the entire town shows up.
Yeah.
And at first it's slow. They're walking slow, and they meet right at the – it wasn't the hotel where they met, right?
They were getting there.
They were going
to the square. Yeah, yeah, the Rick's Square or whatever.
But they all come to the, like, right where Rick's Road starts.
Yeah.
And then the key change happens. And the tempo increases. You can tell it, like, and everybody's like, all right, no time to be sad now. This, it's about to go down. And I just thought that was a very powerful moment up into the speech where, let's be honest, she doesn't start a rebellion. She starts a revolution.
Yeah.
Is Marva the start of the entire, like, rebellion joint? Like, is there going to be a prediction already in season two, like, the rebels coming together? Oh, let's remember Marva. Remember what Marva did. The start of this all, blah, 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 blah. And the only thing I really wrote down from Marva and Bill Pullman is just all of the quote, like every quote that I can remember from it, because there were a lot. I'll let you speak because I don't want to say every piece of quote.
Sure. And even before Marva's speech in B2 Emo, starts to project her, the sky and stone, sky and stone, sky and stone, the chanting, and what even more powerful is the procession, the music, the chanting sort of brought Bix back to this reality, like underneath of it all. And then not only that, but the scenes of just cutting away from the procession and the machinations of what's happening in, you know, Andor's on site and we don't know where he is. And there's all this like whispers in the background. And one of the things that I saw on the final watch, you know, Luthen is speaking with Vel, who I got problems with Vel. She's got it. We got issues. Mm-hmm. But Luthen's like, when's the funeral? And Vel's like, in a couple hours. And then the bell tolls. Bang. Bang. Guess what? Daughters of Ferrix ain't going to have it. We're having it at noon like we wanted it, which is why the Empire was not ready. They thought it was 2 hours from now, which is why they were scrambling. Mm-hmm. It's something I picked up on. Like, no. That's not right. That bell goes off. Everybody's like, what's happening? Everybody goes off of that bell. It's a timekeeping thing. It's just part of that culture. Even the Empire started getting used to hearing that bell only, twice in the morning and then day shift. But now it's like happening in the middle of the day. I'm like, what is going on? No one knows. I thought that was a really cool part of just kind of setting literally the tone of what's about to happen. And then you get, again, the slow-paced banging, the drum, into the key change, into like this awkward, more like standing up. And it's just like everything about it it wasn't a very long speech. It was. I think if we got the speech from start to end, it wouldn't be as powerful without the scenes in between, sneaking around and the different faces and, you know, different characters crying and really, you know, it's starting to heat up. It really reminded me of Rogue One and Jeddah when Andor's like, we got to get out of here. This place is about to blow. Like, there's nothing good is happening right here. This tinderbox is about to spark. It was absolutely phenomenal. And probably something I should bring up is that article that I teased a little earlier. And let me just get in there right now. The mechanics of this episode sort of takes place, and this is going to be a very, very summarized article. Alfred Hitchcock, back in 1934, did something in the way of creating suspense through the eyes of different people, like going to Deidre, going to Cyril, going to Luthen, the band playing in the background. We all know what's about to happen, but it hasn't happened yet, and that tension is building, that tension is building. And then a 6-minute clip from a movie called The Man Who Knew Too Much. It more or less, this lady knows she has to assassinate, or this lady has to assassinate somebody. She's waiting for the gunshot. She knows it. No one else knows it. She's watching the guy going across the room. Tension is building. And like, it's just cool to see a cinematic feature of a 1934 movie being recreated in this key change. And then the ultimate moment of suspense where it blows over, which would be
Fight the Empire,
which was pitched as Fuck the Empire, which Disney said, that's a little too far, and I'm okay with it. I kind of would have liked it to static out a little bit where you didn't really hear fight. You just got like an F word, and it was just like the Empire. And you just make it up in your brain, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe she did say it. Maybe she didn't. We don't know. But it's what a moment to have that. And then just Brasso goes absolutely nutso futso. And I loved every minute of it. And the whole speech, the whole, you know, we were a little worried how the pacing of this episode was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We were a little worried. I thought it was going to really go back and forth between two different storylines. Somehow, Palpatine returned. No, somehow the showrunners weaved a beautiful, smooth storyline. Even when they went to Coruscant.
I had no issues with it.
Right? And they just kind of was like, Antor Krieger is dead. Deidre's not happy about it. Deidre's on FaceTime. We're already back to Ferrix. Whoa. What a smooth transition. It was lovely. Even the Mon scenes, quick and effortless back. And then it was perfect. It didn't even matter at that point. We got a bookend epilogue of Mon and whatever was happening with that. It was actually perfect placement towards mm-hmm. the end of the episode. We got a little bit of closure and you know, and a little bit of fun stuff with Mon and Perrin, and which we'll talk about. But it's just like everything... about, I'm getting a piano. Oh, wait, this is going to be on this album. I'm getting a piano in my ear. Is anybody getting a piano?
I am hearing it now.
Is it just me? What's going on?
I have nothing.
You have nothing? There's a piano playing in my ear. Are we going to keep going? What the hell is going on? I'm freaking out right now. I have no idea what could be possibly paying a background piano. I don't even have the music on tonight. What a derailment of this episode with background piano music playing right now.
See, I would have rather...
Oh, wait, now I caught it.
I would have rather Marva say Scob the Empire.
Yeah.
Instead of Fight the Empire.
Oh, Scob the Empire. Like, all right.
Squigglies.
The answer was the music for my daughters was playing on a Google Cast and switched to my phone, and it was playing Swan Lake. That's what I was hearing.
There we go.
Oh my God, I was going nuts.
That's
for
right.
A
we
second.
Don't need an exorcism or anything.
We
so
don't. Jesus H. Oh my God, that just freaked me out, man. Because I'm usually a pretty good control here. Marva is a marvel. It's amazing. It's amazing.
If I could do it again, I'd wake up early and fight the bastards.
Yeah. Yeah. Marva's closure came in like two forms with Andor through Brasso, which I thought was a great way to ease Cassian's regret of the final argument. Tell him he knows everything he needs to know and feels everything he needs to feel. And when that stuff combines, it'll be an unstoppable force for good. And then this is a great line. If you didn't tear up, you're a loser. I certainly did. I love him more than anything he could do wrong. If that's not the ultimate parent line ever, what a great line. The band plays on, Bix humming to the music, Andor sort of reflecting. Andor not really a star of this episode.
Yeah.
He's
or
just,
the show.
Just on the outskirts. He's like, that's fine. I guess that's fine. I still think the title is probably not correct. You know, even B2 Emo was getting in with the chant. going up and, you know, he's doing that. That was great. It's just amazing. We've been sleeping. You know, we've been sleeping. Is Marva saying to stay woke? Just saying.
Probably.
I'm just saying.
I kind of want more Brasso, too.
We need more Brasso.
His character, like, he was just, like, in the background the first few episodes. His, like, character arc the last two episodes has been incredible.
Awesome.
It's been really, especially, I just remember our conversations about, oh, the first three episodes, really boring, really long, probably throwaway episodes just to get us going. So wrong.
Yep.
Couldn't be wronger. Can't actually wait to revisit the first three episodes to pick up on more character stuff about them to see, you know, to learn more about these characters that, by the way, no one died, really.
Yeah.
Which was a surprise.
I was shocked when I thought
it.
I thought like everyone was dying.
Could've I definitely thought Brass. I thought Bix was going to be a goner for sure. Like
insane.
That just made so much sense. Like from a Cassian like character arc standpoint.
The only one was Zahn, right?
Yeah, and you know, and that's fine. He wasn't, you know, he
was like a telephone operator. Basically,
he atoned. For his, I don't know. I don't know if he needed to atone at all, but he stood up. He went out with a fight, and that's all you can really ask for.
But the guy that Nurchi, the guy that Cass owed money and was working with the Empire to give him Cassian.
Oh yeah, the creep.
Oh yeah. I mean, he had that brief moment of I'm gonna do something, and then. Boom. But I mean, like, there weren't any main, you know, aside from Marva. Like, I really thought there was going to be a ton of casualties in this episode, but we still have a second season. So I guess they had to save them for then. Like, we'll see what happens. But I was really shocked. It kind of left on like a hopeful note, even though we know what's going to end up happening to Cassian.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful epilogue. With a little bit of a cliffhanger, but just again, it's one of those stories where I was like, I wish I was on Ferrix right now. I mean, not to get hurt, but just to be part of it. I want to be part of that sort of change in guard. It's cool to be part of that stuff. Just to recap back to top threes, we talked about Bill Pullman and Key Change. Golden and Moment went together. Golden for me was the weaving of the scenes and how well the pacing of the episode was. Moment obviously was Marva. Justice for Marva was Boom a part of like that procession and just like everything
just,
going down.
Just the uprising basically.
Yeah.
The physical boom from the bomb, the homemade bomb, and then just the uprising scene was just like you knew that they most likely didn't stand a chance, but it's still like it got your adrenaline going. It was awesome.
I thought it was such an interesting use of Stormtrooper because I'm still not understanding, and I'm going to need an Imperial agent to really explain to me why there are two different types of soldiers. Why is there a soldier with a face and a helmet like Veers have? And why are there Stormtroopers? And what's the difference? I obviously know what a Stormtrooper does, but like, aren't Stormtroopers supposed to be your army, you know, or are they the killers? Because it seems to me that's what they were used for. Open fire. You know, I don't have a face, so it doesn't really matter. You're just going to die, you know, from Stormtrooper, and that's just what it is. I don't really know the difference with that. I thought that was a little confusing in use, but I mean, they weren't exactly overwhelmed, but it wasn't good. You know, definitely there was lots and lots of casualties. And in fact, there's lots of questions like, how did it resolve? What happens on Ferrix now? Okay. I don't play chess, Ro. You got to speak to me in Lego. Speak to me in things I understand. Okay. But I get what you're saying. You had build, Damien, as one of your words.
Yeah. That just refers to the post-credit scene, which, like, we all know what the end game was. But just to, like, I just love that irony of, like, Cass and all those prisoners – Yeah. are literally building the Death Star, and then Cass years later is going to be part of the destruction of the Death Star. So
yeah,
Just really, really cool. Like, and just to see that basically all those people that are just working till they die are working to build this complete like space station that's going to cause absolute destruction in the galaxy. So it was just really cool. I just kind of like that little end credit scene.
On first watch of the credit scene, I was like unimpressed with it. And then I came to appreciate it a little bit later. I thought it was like a layup, like, oh, yeah, the Death Star.
Right.
You know, but after thinking about like what you said, you know, and reflecting on it, and I thought it might have been my TV. It felt choppier than how they shot it. So I think I was missing some frames. My TV is weird with these new TV shows. Ever since Captain America and Winter Soldier came out, the way they're shooting this on Disney Plus doesn't gel well with the frame rate on my TV. I get little weird frame drops every once in a while, so it's not a pleasing experience, but I ain't buying a new TV because it works just fine. so I may have just had a poor experience. Then I watched it on the computer, and I was like, ooh, that was really slick. And then I started reading up on it, and like the same designer, the visual effects designer, did it on Rogue One, did it on here. So like I appreciate that continuity. I think that's true. Or they somehow influenced it in some way, shape, or form. But I wonder when the weapon stalls, which would bring in our Rogue One story, right? When does the weapon stall? It's got to stall in 4 years, right? The project has stalled, right? Or not four, it can't be 4 years. It would have to be probably around this time, right? Because Jin is how old at the beginning of Rogue One?
No more than
10?
11? Yeah.
Something like that. And then when we revisit her, it's like 9 years. So I guess the project stalled maybe 4 years ago. And this is it coming into finish. We're getting into the finish work of the weapon, which means that Galen has already laid his trap in the thermal thermal exhaust port, which is so cool to think about. I would love, someone's got to do it. I'm not going to do it, although I should. How does Andor fit within the timeline? But I want to see other scenes from other media. So that's interesting. Mike, Orphan. You had Orphan.
I did.
Little Orphan Annie.
Little Orphan Cassie.
Little Orphan Cassie. He's got nobody now.
So I think about the end part with Cass and Luthen, and the first time I heard him say this, I took it completely different. And then the second time I heard him say it, I guess I interpreted it in my own way. I guess it's left up for interpretation. When he told Luthen to kill me or take me in. And at first, on first watching, when I heard that, I thought he meant like take him back to jail kind of a thing. But I think what it means is like, take me in as like one of your guys. Mm-hmm. So either kill me or take me in. And it says a lot about Cass's character, because he just like yearns for that family ever since,
Clem,
not even Clem, sister, all the little, what planet was that when they're
Cessia? Doesn't sound right.
No.
It's something like that.
Yeah. Where he loses his sister and still he wants to find the family. Clem and...
Canary.
There we go.
Cessia, not close.
Not at all. And then he comes in contact with Clem and Marva, and they raise him, and he loves him more than anything. He has the things with Clem. He has his things with Marva. And he doesn't have anybody now. It just says a lot about his character that like he needs that family. And I just thought, and it goes along with what Marva said to Brasso, and Brasso relayed to Cass, is that he'll be an unstoppable force for good. I just like all of that coming together.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a wonderful, wonderful character, man. I started watching Rogue One last night with the kids. Don't watch that with kids. It's a bad idea. whatever. Andy's like, what's going on? I'm like, well, the stormtroopers are killing people. That's just what they do. You know, it's like,
it's kind of their thing.
And then Kate was like, is this a movie with Darth Vader? And I go, yeah. And he goes, he kills a lot of people. And I go, indeed. You're learning. It's fine. Go back to your tablet. Anyway, two things. The Clem scene I thought was great. Really heartfelt. I did enjoy that they used a young Cassian actor, which was cool. But what really took my eye was what they were cleaning. And those parts that Clem was cleaning in his air fryer was common CPU processor heat sinks that I have 100 of them in my shop. And I just thought that was a cool prop to use because they're kind of cool looking. They get, you know, they got copper in them. They got all these little fins and stuff, and they're really neat looking. And I'm like, they're just a CPU prop. And that's what I love about Star Wars, is they can make something that is common, you know, in my trade, sort of weird in Star Wars. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And then speaking to sort of Andor before he goes to Luthen, Brasso says, you know, you go, you take care of yourself. And he says, it's too late for that. Like, he's already given, not that he's not going to take care of himself, but he's no longer thinking about him anymore. He was thinking about him at the beginning. He's got to get away. I came into $200,000. Let's just go run away. It's going to be fine. And now he's not thinking about that anymore. Mm-hmm. He's thinking about the bigger stuff. It's absolutely incredible. Inspiration is my final word, and that is the moment we've been waiting for, something we've surmised since the death of Nemec, but the Nemec manifesto scenes of him speaking, voiceover, and Andor listening, and wonderfulness and lines from that. And one of the best lines is, one single thing will break the siege. Remember this. Try. Nothing but that. And I just thought that was, you know, obviously that was going to play a big role in Andor's, you know, inspiration and character and moving forward with his resolve, you know, creating a resolve. Couple, you know, we get a Nemec thing that goes into a Marva thing, and you might as well put boiling water in a glass porcelain bowl filled with ice, and it's just going to explode. Or however science works. I don't really get it. Mike, you could explain that better. But you get what I'm saying. We're combining
extreme change in temperature.
Extreme change in temperature. And it's just, it's unbelievable how, you know, we went from not caring about a show to really loving it. Really loving it. So, you know, everything about it with the top threes, just wonderful. Final thoughts on your top three, Mr. Mike.
My favorite, well, two lines that... There were so many good lines and like life advice from both Clem and Nemec. Clem, people don't look down when they should.
Mm.
And then Nemec, tyranny requires constant effort, which is his way of saying it takes more effort to be a dick than.
Yeah, it really does. No, that's a great one. The looking down quote reminded me of Jyn Erso when Saul Guerrero says, "You care not about the cause," and she goes, "You want to see the?" He says, "You want to see the Imperial flag rain or whatever?" And she goes, "If you don't look up, it's not a big deal," you know. And that's mm-hmm. a completely different, you know, opposition to Nemec, it was a Clem that said, "You know, you gotta look down." And then another good line from Clem is, "Eyes open, possibilities everywhere." I thought that was really cool, too. Really cool, too. Dames, any final thoughts on your top three, sirs?
I am good.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Before we move on to list of grievances, anybody have lists of grievances? Anybody have any faults to this episode?
I have a minor one.
A minor one?
Assault.
Okay. I'm not going to play... well, let's get into it right now, then.
I love the sounder.
One of the worst takes I've seen is Ro, who says heatsink devices are commonplace all over the galaxy, including here. I think it's a bad take. It's a bad take because it goes against me. So it's a bad take. Okay. You can call me Peter. Anyway. List of grievances. My word, cloudy. What was your word, James?
Assault.
Not a pepper.
Not a pepper. And not a sugar.
I have very nitpicky things.
Little John. So can we just put little Johns?
But no. Well, they're separate things.
Oh, okay.
I have meat cute.
Meat what?
Oh, meat cute.
Okay. All right.
Meat cute.
Yeah. M E E T. Q U Q C U T. Meat cute.
Meat cute.
Desolate.
Time.
And thirsty.
What was the middle word for me?
Desolate.
Desolate. Okay. Well, Mike, you have three, so you have to start.
Do you want me to start with meet cute?
Of course. I don't know what that is.
So it's like, how did you meet your wife? Like, you have a cute story of how you met your wife or partner or whoever. And this Cyril Dedra thing can just screw right off.
I love it. What are you talking about? Go ahead.
She is going, like, she is about to, like, battle the bastard style Jon Snow. And
oh my God,
just so happens that Cyril picks up the gun and he's like, come with me. She's about to bash him with whatever she grabs her hand. And then there's this, like, are we going to kiss moment?
Yeah.
And then he goes full Batman on her.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they just ripped that right off of Gary Oldman and Christian Bale. It may as well have said, you never got a chance to thank you. And you'll never have to.
All right, two things. One, Cyril definitely watching her the whole time. So he was going to look out for her no matter what. Was never going to let her get hurt. Two, love your Battle of the Bastards reference. Because I felt claustrophobic for her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, her face when she gets hit with the stone. It's funniest stuff ever. Try to freeze frame it. It's wonderful. But her
it was like... you know what it was like? Waterboy, when Colonel Sanders gets hit with that thing, and she's like, ah!
But her trying to dig herself out of it, I was like, I don't like her. I do want her to survive. Is she going to get trampled by everybody? Not a terrible way of going out, but wouldn't be surprised with the way the show is going. I knew Cyril grabbed the gun. What I imagine... how awkward the scene is her adrenaline is pumping at like 400,000%. And she's looking at the person that annoys her the most.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to try to calm down and she can't. And it's weird and it's awkward. And how I met your mother. Who knows? But, you know, it's just like, Dame, I'm sure you hated Cyril. You hate Cyril. You don't like his storyline. No redeeming qualities whatsoever. He has done nothing except exchange hats, which I thought was one weird, but two funny when they put the hats on at the same time. I thought that was fun. But what are you thinking about Cyril in this episode?
I mean, aside from, you know, his you know, blue milk consumption, which I appreciate.
Right.
I'm going to go with a full send on this couple right here. Because
yes!
It's just so dysfunctional and so weird. And I just want to see how it plays out.
I really need to see.
It should not absolutely be a thing at all. And I don't know if they're going to have like some sort of like closed door, like romance now or what's going to happen. But there was definitely a little tension there. So, I mean, every mama's boy has his day. So Cyril, he's going to have his day, I think, in season two.
And you'll never have to. I hope in the future that they're together, but they're in the Imperial, they're in the ISB, and she turns to the rebels.
Ooh.
And now you've got a conflict. I would love it. I would
be like, are you cerealist?
That's right. Are you cerealist? Absolutely fantastic. Meet cute. Knock it off. I love it.
Beat it.
Beat it. But I loved it all at the same time. So good. So good.
She falls in love with her stalker. Get out of my face.
A Star Wars story.
Stalker. Star Wars story.
Love it. I love it. 90 Day Fiance. All right. Mike, go for desolate or thirsty?
While we're on this subject, I'll go thirsty.
Thirsty.
Vel can screw right off,
get
too.
Get the hell out of here, Vel. Get out.
You. Well, all right. Since you know how to get into the apartment, she's like, you didn't meet me at the place. Yeah, because I'm busy starting a rebellion. Good to see you, too. I'm tracking someone in the ISB. Keep it in your pants.
There was something on Twitter that was like, Cinta, I've been tracking an ISB. It's a woman. And it's like, Vel, is she prettier than I am?
Are you mad at me? No, I am just trying to be an asset to the rebellion.
Oh my God.
Do I need to tell you again that you knew what you were getting into?
Okay, so I wrote that Vel is my list of grievance. I also wrote a rebuttal. At the same time, trying to combat an argument that you may have had, because that's where I'm at with my list of grievances, because every single one has been argued against. But I said, Vel's head is not in the game. Or is Vel the emotional beacon for Cinta? Because Cinta's full in. She's got no time for nonsense. But is Vel her lifeline to a normal life?
No, Vel's just when she needs to get her rocks off. That's all Vel is.
Oh my God. Vel, what did Vel bring to the table this season? First off, I thought she was a badass in Aldani. Yeah. Like, I thought she was a badass. I was like, wow, this is really awesome. It was really cool. And then she spiraled out of control.
I liked her. No,
she's a liability.
She sucks.
Anytime it cut to her after Aldani, I was just kind of like, eh.
Now,
I don't know.
I have a positive about Vel. When the boom goes and then the Granados go, which is hilarious. It's the same idea of a car crashing into phantom fireworks and you're just going to have all these little mini explosions. Everybody's running away from that and Vel's the only one running in. And I thought that was really cool. And I was mad at her for that scene because I wanted to not like her. And that made me like her a little bit more.
She's probably looking for Cinta to make
Are you mad
at me?
I know.
I know there was an bomb going off.
There was an explosion.
She was looking for validation.
Speaking of terrible Vel, let's just go.
Validation?
Let's just keep shitting on Vel. This is a Vel and Luthen, like...
Why are they just meeting in the square? What a terrible idea.
They are talking full volume.
There was nothing discreet about them. Just like it was just like they were talking about the weather.
Have you seen Andor?
Right, exactly.
Andor might be here on this planet. His mom died. Let's talk in public while I'm sitting on the floor and you're standing above me, because that's not obvious.
Also, there's an ISB purse officer here. It's a woman. Oh, he goes, a woman? And she goes, you know her? Is she cute?
Has Cinta been talking to her?
So have you seen Cinta? Speaking of Cinta, how about Assassin's Creed Cinta?
Yes.
What a scene. What a scene.
You're bleeding. It's not my blood, bitch.
Get over it, Vel. It doesn't matter. Pack the bags. That's a lot of equipment they got to pack up real quick, by the way.
There was a lot of equipment.
Very, very interesting stuff. All right.
Sorry, I just don't like Vel anymore.
So cloudy was my word about Vel, because her head's in the cloud, babe. What are you doing? Come on. What's going on? Yo, Dames, Assault. Go for it.
Assault. I mean, this is just this minor gripe because I love a character so much, but who flips over a droid as adorable as B2?
Son of a bitch.
Really, like,
you know what? You know who flips over a droid? Guys who wear capes.
That's right. I saw that and I was just like, oh no, because I was just hoping he was going to pull out of the episode. And obviously, we know he did, but I was just like, you son of a bitch.
Does the guy not know how projections work? You gotta cover the whole projection eye. What are you doing, idiot?
Not a fan of that guy. Not a fan.
Would fans be rioting if he shot B2? Only if it resulted in K2. That's all. It would have been a good, it actually would have been a good moment for B2 to be blown to smithereens.
Would have made sense.
And
because at
and
this
then,
point they're prolonging it, right? Like,
well, yeah, exactly. They could have fight the Empire, and then a stormtrooper, bang, and it's that explodes, and Brasso goes nutso futso, right? Because that's been his buddy. They've been having sleepovers. They've been recharging together, telling ghost stories. And then the same guy who drags him off of the whatever could do the same thing.
Yeah.
Except he's blown to smithereens, you know, or he's disabled or something. I don't know. Whatever you want to do. But no, that would have been a good moment for it to get out of there. Mike, you have desolate.
Yes.
Or desolate.
Desolate. I
Desposito.
Find...
Desposito. I love that song. Not as much as I love Pepas, but I love Despacito.
Indeed.
So, I have this issue with pretty much every Star Wars movie, yeah, show, whatever. Whenever there is a search and rescue, somehow no one is patrolling anywhere where they should be. There's like, oh, something happened over here. Let me have the entire platoon go and handle this.
Yeah.
How is Cass just able to roam freely through this hotel, yeah, and run into like a guy? And it's like his buddy who's the cook. Cass?
Temek.
Yeah. It just annoys me. Every time there's a search and rescue mission, there's never any confrontation.
There was a guy. A guy?
A guy.
Who abruptly got absolutely blasted in, yeah, 4 seconds. Great move by Cass on that.
Singular guy.
I think of it as they were so surprised by the funeral procession starting that they just pulled people. And in the chaos of it all, people lost their posts. I mean, look at Aldani.
Yeah.
Right. That was a well orchestrated on purpose, you know, minimalizing post. But, you know, I get what you're saying. I mean, listen, you got to have some kind of trope or trick to get our star to where he needs to go. I love that Cass used the same tunnel that Marva fell trying to find.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great. What a wonderful, wonderful reference back to our Marva. But I hear what you're saying.
Marvelous Marva. And I just wish we saw Saw.
I need to see Saw.
I love Seesaw.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I think I got enough Saw in the episode, in the series, without it being too aggressive. I think we'll definitely see a little snippet in season two for sure.
Seesaw.
Definitely see him kind of descent more into... radicalism and
paranoia
and all that crazy stuff.
Did you come here to kill me? I really love Rogue One. Rogue One's such a great movie.
His lines are so good. Like,
it's great.
They're hilarious, but like, yeah, he just, I don't know. They're so good still at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm just mad the chef didn't offer Cassian any ham door.
Ah! Very good. All right, well let's shake it off like Ticketmaster and talk about go into our noticements. I've got a list of stuff. I'm sure you have a list of stuff.
I have stuff.
If you've noticed anything, get ready to type it in the chat or comment on what we noticed. We're an hour 5 in and we're only at the noticements. We're in for a doozy, everybody. Let's do it.
Breaking news, the Philadelphia Flyers have broken their 10-game winless streak with a 3-1 win over the Islanders using magic, bricks, and screws. Go Flyers. So a couple things that I noticed right off the front. The hauler ship from Rogue One is very present when the Lambda-class shuttle is coming in. I sort of forgot how big Ferrix is. I forgot. Like, I'm thinking it's a small town, podunk town. It's not. This is an industrial zone. There's stuff happening on Ferrix. And then when you frame it with Marv's speech, trade routes, and they left us alone, but now they're back and they're not leaving. I just thought that was a really cool way of framing Ferrix as a very large place. And they did a lot of great cinematography shots of sort of being away from town. And I thought that was really cool. Deidre in the hood. In the hood. Walking the hood. Reminded me of the very recent House of Dragons scene when what's her face? I don't remember any of the names. They sort of traverse the town and look for things, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Rhaenyra,
very good, yes. All right, can we do a debate on whether or not Perrin is in on this gambling thing? Because half of me is feeling like Mon is setting him up, but also Perrin understands that they have to play this game, so he's now, with the betrothal and the money, is this their unified front, or is Mon just setting him up because it's easy to do and it doesn't really matter the way he reacts because she's feeding him lines? What say you, friends out there, Mike or Damien?
I think it's just a chess move.
Chess move? Like a Mon Mothma chess move? Perrin has nothing to do with this?
I think so. There's been times where she seems completely in control, and then there's times where we know she's just not as in control as she thinks she is. But I think, like, you know, she's trying as best she can to play the game, and I think that he's, you know, Perrin's just part of it.
Is...
Oh, yeah, sorry, another chess reference.
What is chess? Who's that girl? It's chess. All right. Underrated show, New Girl. Would I watch it? I did watch it every single episode.
So I only understood that reference because it was in The Office, where he's like, "Who's that girl? It's Andy." When he like shaves his beard after he sails on his family's boat for like 3 months.
That's funny. You should watch New Girl. New Girl's a good show. New Girl's a good show. Sidebar.
Yeah, Kim's a big New Girl fan. Yeah, gotta catch it.
Sure.
I mean, the cast is awesome.
Yes. Yes. To you, Mike, what do you think of the Perrin?
Mon said, like, a few episodes back, there's money missing, right? But, like, are we sure that missing money went towards Rebellion?
I understand that 400,000 is missing.
Yes.
And that it was to fund whatever Luthen's operations need. Mm-hmm. That's how I understood it. And it sounds to me like Mon is obviously getting involved with Davo.
Mm-hmm.
To recoup to fill the ledger, but at the same time creating a narrative that it was missing in the first place because of her husband's gambling habits. Shout out the Canto Bight sequel trilogy. Suck it, bro. Last Jedi reference.
Oh, that was one of my noticements. I will cross that off the list.
Canto Bight, a reference of my favorite location in all of Star Wars ever.
Yes.
Incredible. Oh. Yes.
So, I don't know. Perrin could go kick
suck
rocks.
A butt. Tell him to go suck a butt.
He could suck a butt.
All right. I will do one more, and then I'll hand it over to Mike before I take another one.
That's fine.
One of the things I love the most about this episode, again, although it's a big town, the small town feel of everybody knows each other. Every single person that Cass ran into gave him condolences for his mom. The guard dog guy, I don't know his name. Brasso, obviously. And then the kitchen guy, Temek. Sorry for your mom, Cass.
Plagueis? Just,
that Plagueis? Sounds right. That sounds right. And I just thought that it was such a good small town feel in a big town city. And again, we talked about, did Cass redeem himself by maybe paying off everybody that 12K in credits? People seem to really like him. You know, you really don't get called. Like, people aren't going to call you unless they care about you when someone dies in your family.
Right.
You know, anybody who puts condolences on Facebook, fake. I don't want to hear it. I want a text message or a phone call. If you don't have my number, there's a reason why you don't have my number. But that's just how I feel. You know, I just thought that was a really cool part of Andor.
Thoughts and prayers.
Take your thoughts and prayers, stick them in the Vel suitcase, throw it overboard. No one wants it. Mike, to you. Give us some.
Luthen doesn't wear goggles when he's on his speeder. You okay over there?
Yeah, I got crazy kid just still awake apparently at 10:45.
How he's got old eyes. How does he protect happening? His eyes?
How is this happening? I agree. What is going on?
I didn't even think about that until just now.
He wears
now.
Gloves, though. He wears fingerless gloves, but no goggles.
The PPE is not in Star Wars.
Yeah, PPE.
I don't know. Young Anakin wears it.
This is interesting. You know who wore it? Our boy, fake Han Solo from Episode 5 of Mandalorian.
Yeah, he did.
He wore some goggles. You wore some goggles? That's so funny. All right, please give me another one. I love that.
To prove how much Brasso is even more of a badass, he headbutts a man with a helmet on, and the stormtrooper goes down.
Yes, he does. Yes, he
does. I noticed that, and I was like, that's not life.
Using the brick as a weapon is the best way to honor Marva ever.
I, for some reason, thought the brick was going to be the bomb. Like, this episode opens with a child making a bomb, when the way Brasso was holding it, I thought he was going to throw the brick at him, and I thought the brick was going to be the bomb.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the three-tiered flutes that the marching band had. They kind of looked like spaceships.
Once again, a common item, making it look sort of wacky for Star Wars. You know, it's just a little off, a little alternate reality. It's lovely.
And that's all I got. The other ones we've mentioned in either tops or bottoms.
Okay. Dames, throw it to you. I have a couple more.
Yeah, I got a couple. So I did notice the Canto Bite name drop. I guess they're, you know, nothing they could do is gonna change any fan's mind of Last Jedi, but still cool to kind of hear that. And it, like, I'd love to see what Canto Bite looks like in that time period. Still really neat to hear that. Also, I really liked that, like, the ship that they took. Two things. One, it kind of almost looked like a Y-wing.
Yeah.
And then two, I love how they had flags around that whole entire lot. Like, it was like a used car lot.
Yes. Like, I thought the same thing.
I was like, wait a second. Because I drive down the street and you see your used car lot and, like, just those tacky sales guys. And
correct.
I just love that they had that. That just made me chuckle a little bit that, like, I don't know. It was just funny to me.
Just bang the fuel gauge. It'll be fine.
It's just, I love that. Like, I was like, okay, fine. We can have flags around this lot of, ships. Sure, why not? And then I saw one thing on the internet that kind of made me laugh. So, like, obviously, the post-credit scene, we have those kind of spider-like droids building the Death Star. And then there was someone who took a picture of that and then a picture of the Mandalorian, where those same or similar droids are building Luke's temple. And the caption was like, anything that these types of robots build basically will destroy it, be destroyed at some point, which is true for Luke's temple. Obviously, all that crumbled and the Death Star blew up. So
that's an interesting connection.
Not similar droids, but similar in function.
Yes.
So I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, the used car lot just got me. So good.
Tell me you're a nerd without telling me you're a nerd. Scuttlebutt comes in with the ship was a BTL-B Y-Wing Starfighter. Slightly different than the OT Y-Wing.
And that is why I love this stuff. Because now I'm going to do some research once we're done recording tonight and then like learn something. So
Hasbro just announced a new HasLab ship called the BTL-B Y-Wing Starfighter with broken fuel gauge.
If it doesn't come with the flags, I'm not buying it.
Correct.
Come with flags.
I want the used car lot flags. If they don't come on top, I send it back.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's after 10,000 backers. You get the flags.
Yeah, that's a 12,000 backer tier.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed, I think it has something to do with the special editions when Lucas sort of fiddled with the OT a little bit and put in like stormtroopers and when they're look sir, droids, you know, that scene where they're looking for things. There's a scene where in Andor there's a backpack. And it's an interesting shot because it's like we only see the backpack, the top of the head of the soldier, and then he like moves away from the camera. And I felt like that scene was a copycat from an original trilogy scene in the desert with a stormtrooper with that same style backpack. And I mean, you obviously had to look up the backpack, but I think that was the same style just a few years later, searching the deserts of Tatooine. So that's something that I thought that was cool that I noticed. And then the thing that you should have noticed, Andor casually disables the Fondor's computer and no one's talking about it. The same Fondor that can calculate hyperspace and have red laser beams and countermeasures, Andor just put it in airplane mode. And I thought that was really cool. Like, what does that say to Luthen about his skill set?
Yeah.
By disabling his own ship.
That means Cassian's a good hand to have, for sure.
You know? So I thought that was neato, cool. Any final noticements? That's it for me. A lot of the stuff we went over in our conversation and discussion. So there's no reason to rehash it here. If you missed it, you'll just have to rewind.
Thing I noticed was a lack of Dengar in this episode.
Right.
Huge noticement. I don't know if anyone else out there noticed it.
Yeah. I didn't notice Dengar, but if I rewatch it, there's just a chance. There's an ugly guy
in the background that has a backpack on and a long rifle. It could have been him, but otherwise, no Dengar. Just crazy.
No Dengar.
I think Kathleen Kennedy's final project, because the rumors are swirling that she's done after Indy 5, should be a Bounty Hunter series on Disney Plus.
I would love that.
And they should call it The Mandalorian. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was going to be the book of Oz.
Diary of Dengar. That is correct. Dengar's dialects. And scarf sales.
The foreword of Forlom.
Yes. Oh my god.
The Bible of Bane.
Yes. I was trying to think of the booklet of Bosk.
That guy back to life. Like, what the heck, man?
The booklet of Bosk. Bosk.
The brochure of
Bosk. Oh my gosh. What was Fennec's?
Padme.
Yeah. The Files of Fennec.
Anyways.
Fennec Shand.
All right. Mike, any final noticements, friend?
Just the one thing I want to add between the conversation of Cass and B2 at the end, when Cass says, "I'm counting on you," and B2, you always say that. And then Cass, "You always come through."
And you always come through. Love that line. Wrote it down as well. Wrote it down as well. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, there's no easy way to sum up a wonderful finale, but we will try our best to do so in the next segment, One Sentence Summary.
It's so loud.
Every single time
I'm reminded. It makes me laugh every time.
Because that's absolutely me at like any child's party if there's kazoos. I'm 100%.
Kazoos. What a weird word.
It is a weird word.
Okay. I have a anybody have a creative song? I always like to ask that question so I know the order.
No song.
No song.
Pun.
Fun? All right, Mike.
Pun.
Start us off with your pun, friend.
Okay. Very short and simple, too. The Empire got Rick's rolled.
Love it.
And with the rebellion, we're never going to give you up. Ooh. Go ahead, Mr. Damien. I'll go last. It's my show. I get to make the rules.
And that's fine. Yeah, I mean, my one sentence summary is just a overall season one sentence summary. Yeah. What is your favorite Star Wars TV show, and why is it Andor?
Bang!
Fight the Empire.
That's correct. That is correct.
Scob the Empire.
Scob the Empire. Get the squigglies. Squigglies.
I want more of them.
What are those guys doing? Guys.
Tickle the Empire.
Squigglies, a Star Wars story. Squigglies. All right. Here we go.
The scenes of Squigglies.
Andor's emotional finale sparks a fire that can't be put out, sending our characters onto their next journey, shooting panic through the Empire and clearing a path for the first moments of the rebellion.
Nice.
It wasn't alarm worthy, but I wanted to play something just for
play the alarm. I love the alarm.
Indeed. Indeed. I don't have predictions for season two. I'm not ready to talk about it because I just want to talk about season one. So I'm going to do an audible and skip predictions for season two. And let's get right into our raunchy and final segment, Mike's OnlyFans. Where can we subscribe to today? I heard of a teacher who got fired from her job for doing videos in a middle school. So yeah. Nice job by you.
Great.
I mean, I at least wait till I get home.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't wait the 20 minutes even.
That's what I'm saying.
So for this week, I decided there's very popular genre, subgenre, whatever, over on the hub. I mean, I'm not into it, but I figured I'd hop on it. This week, you could find me at OnlyFans/stepdaughters of Ferrix.
Oh, my God. I hate it.
It's perfect.
I hate it. You ruined this episode for me and the last one, for sure.
I love when Deidre's like, "Daughters, the daughters of Ferrix." Now I'm forever going to think the stepdaughters of Ferrix.
Oh, my God. We were glad you enjoyed that. We always try to end with something funny like that. Friends, listen. That's Andor season one. One thing that was wonderful is that we didn't bring you 12 weeks of coverage. We brought you nearly six. We had a three. And we had two doubles, right?
Yeah.
Three and two doubles. So we were able to bring you at least six or seven live episodes for you on the Extra Star Wars channel. we appreciate you checking in on us. This was a wonderful, surprising series, to say the least.
100%.
I'm hoping for more. I'm looking forward to the future of Ahsoka, to the future of Mando, of course, to the other projects. Skeleton Crew is even something that seems to be interesting. I mean, it's Jude Law. Come on. Can't be bad, right? Looking forward to The Acolyte. Maybe a movie comes out. Who knows? I'm sure they're going to restructure and figure it out and think about what they want to do with their vision. It's just a wonderful, I'm not going to say it's a wonderful time to be a Star Wars fan, but this certainly helps with that statement for sure. Especially, you know, listen, Kenobi was vanilla. It's what it was, you know, it's vanilla, and that's fine. Book of Boba Fett, downer. It's just been so long since we've had Mando that we don't remember. We've been sleeping. We've been sleeping, and we got to wake up, right? Like our girl Marva said. And then Andor, just such a breath of bricks and screws and fresh air and wonderfulness with it. And I can't say how proud I am of the show. And, you know, even Twitter, hardly I see, Andor was a stupid show. I'm not going to watch it. It's boring. Like, the three arguments is, it's boring, it's long, and I don't care about this character. Maybe watch it. That's what I would do. You know, so, whatever.
Definitely watch it. And it is good on a second rewatch, too. And now, like, it's cool that they're releasing them for people who don't have Disney Plus. Like, hey, check it out on ABC. Like, I don't know when the rest of the episodes come out. I know they started doing that last week. But it's a change of pace, man. Book of Boba Fett was like... Obi-Wan was great for fan service. Like, you know, we had Hayden get like his redemption as Darth Vader, and that was cool. And everyone loves Ewan McGregor, but like, yeah, Andor was just one that I slept on it, and it's so good.
Everybody slept on it because when you sleep is when the Empire does the most damage. Okay, the House of Mouse hopefully is back and right. And as we exit tonight's show, I want to say thank you to Mateo, Mike. I want to say thank you to Damien for continuing this adventure with me. I want to thank everybody in our chat, from Scarif to Ubaldo to Nicole to Used and Abused to Kim and anybody else, Rogue One Radio, Backyard TARDIS, who checked in. It's been a pleasure, everybody. As always, the show is part of the Red 5 Network. See you next time. To the next adventure. 5 years after Return of the Jedi, Mando will be back.
This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.